Now on to today's roundtable. We'll talk about this controversy and more. Joining us to discuss these topics from our New York Bureau, Pedro Noguera, Professor of Education at New York University. Robert George is also with us. He's an editorial writer at the New York Post. And from our NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C., economist and author Julianne Malveau, who's president and CEO of Last Word Productions. And I'm told that Walter Fields is with us rather than, I assume, Robert George.
I don't feel bad that you left me out here.
Don't feel bad. I'm just reading my script, my friend, just reading my script. All right. That being said, let's move on to what we just heard from Terry Prather, who is a general manager at Six Flags. Walter Fields, this is not the first time we've seen African-Americans come to loggerheads about hairstyles and the like. Succinctly put, he suggests that, look, we have standards. If you don't want to meet them, don't work here.
Well, it's a very Eurocentric perspective, and I think it's another example of capital clashing with culture. And this isn't the first company to run into this problem. You might recall that the Disney company ran into problems when they opened Euro Disney in France and also their new property in China. And it strikes me as very weird because when you look at where the Six Flags property is located, I used to live in Prince George's County. It doesn't get any blacker than Prince George's County, Maryland, and as well as economically stable. So I think the company is treading on very thin ice here if they don't understand that they have to implement some degree of cultural sensitivity around these issues. Certainly employers have a right to have a dress code, but I think they also have to take in fact and into concern some of the cultural dynamics here in a community where you're going to have hairstyles that are a bit different from Eurocentric hairstyles.
Julianne Malveau, this goes back to the whole idea. I think I said this last week on something we were talking about. Do the right thing. Hey, it's my pizza parlor, and if I want to have Frank Sinatra up on the wall, I'm going to have him up on the wall.
Well, I think that Walter raises an interesting point, though, given the demographic composition of Prince George's County. I think this guy is setting himself up for a potential boycott, frankly. But even more than that, we have, as you said in the intro piece, seen these clashes with African-American people in their hair going from several hotels here in the Washington area about a decade ago with sisters wearing cornrows. Just 3 months ago, Judge Maybelline Ephraim left Fox with her divorce court show because they insisted that the sister wear a wig, which is absurd. They never insist that the little blonde thing keep the straw out of her hair or anything like that. So let's be real clear that there is a lot of implicit discrimination, and if not discrimination, certainly a myopia to diversity issues that's going on here. These young people, young African-American, Mr. DeLon in particular, these young African-American men and women have a very hard time in the labor market and are being asked to make absurd compromises, I think, very early on in their career. Now, 3 feet of hair is one thing, but after it's been cut to 1 foot of hair, I don't think that that's so absurd.
And that's what happened to the 17-year-old Pedro. His mom cut his hair, 2 feet of it. It's reported that he was down to 1 foot. What I found most interesting is he was hired, according to AP, to wear a costume of Sylvester and Daffy Duck. So I don't think you'd necessarily even see his hair. But that being said, Pedro, go ahead.
Well, I just think that they are on very thin ice. It's very difficult when you hear that manager, and it's interesting who they chose to speak on behalf of the company, sounded like an African-American. That they really can't defend it on any objective grounds, how the hairstyle would interfere with the job or in some way undermine what they're trying to do. So it's pretty much, I think that it's pretty clear they are discriminating. They really can't defend what it is that they're doing. And I think that, as the previous speaker said, really open themselves up to a boycott.
All right, let's take a look at what is a very disturbing figure. And these are graduation figures of big city schools. They are actually struggling to graduate 50% of their student body at the end of 4 years. This includes cities like Detroit, Baltimore, New York, Dallas, Denver, and Houston. Detroit being the lowest, the graduation rate for Detroit public schools, 21.7%, Pedro Noguera.
This is a tragedy of immense proportions, and what I find particularly disturbing about it is just thinking for New York City, for example, Mike Bloomberg ran for re-election this year on the praising himself for having fixed New York City's public schools. Meanwhile, we knew that we had this tremendous dropout rate problem, and it was never an issue. And what that suggests is that there's a tolerance in this country for the fact that we will systematically fail to educate large numbers of kids. part of the reason for that is because there are many commentators. I'm thinking right now about John McWhorter, for example, who recently wrote a op-ed piece in which he accused kids of choosing to quit school who really don't understand the issue. It's not eighth and ninth graders are not choosing to leave school. What's happening in our schools is they are so dysfunctional, so unable to respond to the needs of these basic students that kids are voting or leaving. And they the schools are planning for them to leave because they aren't even able to serve their needs, much less to provide an education that will prepare them for adulthood. So I really think it's also an indictment of the Bush administration and the No Child Left Behind policy, because
Walter
it's
Fields,
clear that lots
sorry,
of kids
Pedro,
are being left out.
Walter Fields, I know that you've been on the ground floor of much of this in New York City. We should note that less than 40%, 38.9% graduation rate in New York City.
Yeah, and we should also note that the New York City Council Education Committee a year ago released a report that showed less than 10% of Black and Latino high school students actually graduate with a Regents Diploma, which is the academic diploma issued to New York City high school students. This is a systemic failure, and I think it has tremendous consequences for our community. A lot of these young people are a lot smarter than we give them credit for being, and a lot of them, if they are opting out, they are opting out because they understand that they are being cheated out of an education. And I think that we really have to be honest about this debate and look at all the failures, whether it's on the political side, the fact that our federal government really doesn't do enough about public education. Mm-hmm. We always talk about public education, but if you look at the dollars spent on public education against our military budget, it's paltry. We have to look at failures at the state level, where states like New York refuse to fund New York City public schools to the level that they should be funded. And then we have to look locally and ask our teachers what's going on in some of these classrooms, because in many instances, our young people are not being served well. And finally, I think we need to ask ourselves a question in terms of being parents and guardians of children. What are we doing wrong that suggests that we cannot educate a generation of young people when many generations before this generation were educated under severe conditions? But something is going on here. I think we have to have a real honest discussion about it.
We should note, Julianne Malvo, that right outside of Washington, D.C., Prince George's County, Maryland, graduates 82.5% of its high school students. Philadelphia, 72.2. The county that encompasses Atlanta, 70%. But still, nowhere near the numbers that one would assume.
No, those numbers are better than the ones in Detroit and Baltimore, certainly, but they're nothing, if you will, to write home about. In fact, one of the things in the piece that you all shared talked about the U.S. needing to be more competitive. And what I fear if we look at the long run is we'll see a very bifurcated society with white folks basically having the skilled, high-paying, et cetera, position, and these groups of young people who are dropouts and others literally being on the periphery of the economy. I think that Walter's breakdown in terms of who we look at it for failures is important. We don't have a crisis in education. We have a crisis in inner-city education. If you go to the suburbs surrounding these areas, you don't have those same crises. What's that Fields area, Ed, outside of Bloomfield Hills or something?
Mm-hmm.
Outside of Detroit.
Outside of Detroit.
Mm-hmm. Their public schools are doing just fine, thank you, and I bet their numbers are 80-ish, if not 90-ish. So it's an inner city education problem that we have that's a function of any number of things. It's the average age of a school is 42. I mean, that's a phenomenal number. When you look at the average age of a suburban school, I would bet you money is something more like 10 or 12. And so when you look at some of those things, I think that you're really looking at the intentional bifurcation and the intentional sidelining of students of color.
Pedro Noguera, Julianne talks about a bifurcated society. We're already seeing that. I was listening to the radio this morning, and they're talking about a report that we'll talk about in the next day or so that really talks about the true elimination of the middle class in many large areas like New York City, that there are rich and poor in the middle class. The percentage of what America calls middle class is shrinking and shrinking by the minute. One has to believe this is part and parcel of all of that.
It is. The quality education our students receive, access to college, all are the avenues that we have traditionally relied upon to give access to the middle class. And those avenues are being shut down. When you see numbers like this, when you see systems that are allowed to function that graduate fewer than 50% of their students, what you have to recognize is that this means large numbers of young people will not be prepared for the jobs that are available and will be relegated to lives that are much, much more difficult. And I think it, again, speaks to the failure of broad education policy at local, state, and federal level. Can I just add one thing, Ed? No child left behind. One of the effects of it, many states have been forced to adopt high-stakes exams, which require kids to pass these exams in order to get the diplomas. What many school districts realize is one way to improve your test scores is to get rid of kids that bring them down. And that's why we're seeing a large number of districts with very high dropout rates, particularly in the ninth grade.
And Walter, you know, we sometimes miss the idea when we give the graduation rate at 21.7 for Detroit. But what that really means is that 80% of the people that go to Detroit public schools do not graduate from high school.
Yeah, they're huge numbers. And if you look at New York City again, I mean, there was a study that was done by the Community Service Society that showed that 170,000 young people in New York were disconnected. These are young people who are not in school and not working. The numbers are staggering when you start looking at these metropolitan areas. As Julian said, this is truly an urban issue that we have before us.
Yeah, Julianne Malvo, quickly, with about a minute and a half, and we cannot dismiss the fact, and sometimes we don't like to say it out loud, but the majority of these kids in most of these cities are people of color.
No, they're African-American and Latino kids who for whom the consequences of dropping out of school are greater economically. Again, a white boy who drops out of high school will be unemployed at a rate of 15%. A black boy who drops out of high school will be unemployed at a rate of 75%. So the consequences of dropping out are greater for African-American and Latino kids. One of the things that I must point out about this study, though, is that it may slightly overstate the dropout problem, only because they're not counting folks who get held back. And so it's important not to take away from the conversation we're having about the problem, because it is a problem, but let's also look at some of the issues of holding back. And this calls for interventions on the part of our communities. When our kids are held back, what do we do to make sure they get back on the right path? The real question, Ed Gordon, is who are the advocates for our children? I mean, it's not just these teachers, parents, etc., but where are the exactly, and that's why you have the situation.
Yeah. All right. Well, I greatly appreciate it. And again, these are issues that we try to bring to light, but we also encourage the listeners to understand that it really is about being an advocate and not just saying, tis, 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 this is a problem, that you really have to start to raise your voice. Julianne Malvo, Pedro Noguera, and Walter Fields, thank you very much for being a part of the roundtable
today. Thank you, Ed.
Thanks, Ed.
Next up on News and Notes, NPR senior correspondent Juan Williams brings us political insight from Washington on this week's Political Corner, and a Brit travels the country to find out what it means to be an American. We'll be right back.